In Business on Radio Kerry. Keeping you informed with business matters, home and abroad.
Good evening and you're very welcome to In Business. Amber Galway here with you until 7 o'clock this evening. I'm filling in for Mary Gallagher over the next 2 weeks. I hope you're all keeping well and you're enjoying this lovely weather that we're having. Long may it last. We've another busy show this evening. Over the next hour we'll hear about the impacts the housing crisis and the cost of living are having on workplaces. We'll also hear from hotelier Padraig McGillicuddy about what makes a successful business like Ballygarry Estate Hotel and Spa and what his plans are for the business over the coming years. A little later on, I'll be joined by Liam Quinlan. The business recently took part in a trade fair in Germany, so I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. As always, I'd love for you to get in touch. You can email inbusiness@radiokerry.ie. You can tweet the show. We're at inbusinessrk. Or you can also send us a message on the Radio Kerry Facebook page. Now, first up this evening, we're going to be discussing the housing and cost of living crisis and the huge impact that seems to be having on workplaces. Damien McCarthy, CEO of HR consultancy firm HR Buddy, who many of you will know from his regular slot here on the show, joins me now to discuss this a little bit more. Damien, you're no stranger to the show and we're delighted to have you back on.
My pleasure to be back, Amber.
So I suppose, Damien, something that we're hearing a lot about recently is the housing crisis and the cost of living. They've been dominating the headlines, but something that we aren't really hearing as much about is the impact that that's having on workplaces, and it's quite a significant one, I understand.
Yeah, well, I suppose any crisis, Amber, will have its knock-on effects, and that is very true for, I suppose, anyone in society. It has its impacts back in to their workplace. So I suppose a number of knock-on effects are being seen in our everyday dealing with our clients, and I suppose one kind of unusual or surprise one is a rise in employees approaching their employers for loans. So we've had a number of inquiries on how employers should approach this, and in many circumstances the employer is not in a financial position anyway to approve a request whereby an employee may ask for a loan. But I think it gives a very clear indication that people are really struggling, as an employee asking their employer for a loan is not something that would have been very common, but it is now becoming surprisingly a more frequent occurrence. Now, I have heard things like, you know, back to school costs for working parents and rental accommodation for their kids going back to college and things like that being mentioned. So I suppose it's a sign of the times that perhaps there is a struggle because of the cost of living crisis and so on. And very many employees and small and medium-sized businesses will work with their employer directly every day and have a very good relationship and perhaps a personal relationship with them locally and in the community and so on. So this is something that's coming up, but employers, of course, must be very, very careful, and where mistakes can be made by some employers who will give a dig out in some circumstances to their employees is that they keep that arrangement too casual, and the employee may leave the employment subsequently, or indeed you know, I suppose it isn't formalised, there's nothing in writing, it's a casual arrangement, and therefore the employer can leave themselves open to breaking the law through the Payment of Wages Act in the repayment of the loan. So, as I said, it's something which is becoming a more frequent occurrence, but I suppose there wouldn't be a whole lot of advice, and it would be seen as quite unusual, and as I said, a sign of the times, but employers do need to be careful and to make sure that they would formalise any arrangement if they were to agree to loan out any money to their employees.
And Damien, I know you mentioned there that, you know, obviously businesses are struggling as well, given the rise in energy costs, for example, and even, I suppose, the increased wage demands. But if an employer does get a request like this and they aren't in a position to facilitate it, is there anything else that they can do maybe to help their staff if they are worried that they are really struggling?
Yeah, well, I suppose, as I said, a lot of business owners are business owners of small and medium-sized business and have good relationships and close relationships with their team, and I suppose are always looking to help them out. But I think really at the moment it's just a sign of the times, Amber, and there's a lot of people under pressure, and yes, workers may be under pressure from a financial point of view because of rising energy costs and inflation and so on. But I suppose the unfortunate thing is the employer is as well. And I think what's important in these times is that employers are protected as well. And I would most certainly hope that perhaps more supports for employers can be considered as part of the budget next month, because many business owners are probably in the same position as their employees and being hit on the double. For example, a small business owner, you know, they will have to pay their mortgage personally, they will have rising energy costs at home, and then when they go into their business, they have these same inflationary problems as well. So I think it's very important actually that next month in the budget, employers are remembered, because it is effectively employers that are going to protect workers at the end of the day to try and get through this crisis.
Absolutely, that's a very good point. And I suppose it's coming at a very difficult time, because there are many businesses that are still trying to recover and deal with the impacts that the COVID-19 pandemic brought. And I know supports were brought in there. When you mention supports now, is it similar supports that we saw during the pandemic, or what kind of supports do you think would help businesses?
Well, I think the situation is that since March 2020, obviously, businesses have been in crisis, obviously, because of COVID-19. Now, the business supports and the supports provided to employers during that time were obviously an enormous help, and that helped businesses to stay open and survive and to keep people in their jobs. But as we have come out into brighter times of COVID-19, we're now being faced with a number of other crises. And I suppose, you know, it was always going to be a difficult period coming out of a global health pandemic. But when you throw in the war in Ukraine, the inflationary cost of living crisis, a housing crisis, which has its own impacts in some ways, and of course, you know, I suppose a very stretched labour market, you know, big pressure on demand for an increase in wages and so on, there's an awful lot for businesses and employers to have to deal with. So there's almost an argument that, you know, businesses need support now as much as they needed support back a year and 18 months ago. So, as I said, I think it's a very definite consideration that businesses and employers need to be protected in order to protect the workers. And I think it should be a consideration through the cost of living crisis that businesses would have some level of support reintroduced.
And Damien, I suppose it follows on really from that. You know, we mentioned that businesses are obviously facing their own struggles, and as you rightly pointed out, some of them are facing those at home as well, because, you know, they might be small business owners or self-employed. Like, we really do need businesses to be able to survive this difficult period and to get those kind of supports, because they're the people who help bring down the unemployment rate and to get people into employment and just get the economy going and keep it going.
Yes, exactly. And I suppose, like, very positively last week, we would have seen reports by the CSO of, you know, a 4.2% unemployment rate. You know, that is absolutely fantastic. And I suppose we're actually very near what would be considered full employment in this country. Now, whilst that's fantastic, it brings about its own, I suppose, struggles and problems for businesses, because, you know, there is a shortage of skills and of talent, and there is a very stretched labour market. So take, for example, in Kerry, where, you know, obviously hospitality and tourism is a huge part of our local economy. They have struggled to recruit, I suppose, and there is a shortage in that area, and unfortunately we have seen some of those businesses having to close their doors and or decrease their operations on certain number of days in the week during the peak season of 2022. And I suppose those businesses really needed peak season 2022, because they have spent 2 years previously being impacted by COVID-19. So I suppose, you know, these are businesses, they need a leg up, and they are no doubt going to find it difficult to get through things like the, you know, the inflation crisis, these huge energy bills that they're now facing, and so on. And I suppose if they're not protected, well, then that means that 4.2% unemployment figure is going to be really impacted, and we may see job losses. So absolutely critical, I think, that now is considered a time to protect our businesses.
And are you worried that we might see an unemployment rate rise? Is that a very real thing that could happen, that we could be experiencing if things aren't put in place to help those businesses?
Well, I think there's an awful lot of bubbles being blown on at the moment with inflation, with the fact that there is a labour shortage and the increased demand on wages and so on. So, you know, if you keep on blowing on these bubbles, you know, eventually they may burst and they may leave a mess. And it would very definitely be a worry that that might happen. I suppose if you look in particular at maybe, you know, consumer confidence during an inflation crisis, you can see, you know, maybe a decrease in footfall, a tightening of the belt, which obviously needs to happen, I suppose, within household budgets and personal budgets and so on. And that obviously has its impacts. That puts businesses under pressure, the local economy under pressure. And if that was to continue, most certainly there would be a worry going into the winter period, and in particular in, I suppose, those tourism markets like Kerry, that during the winter period you may see maybe, you know, some redundancies or some businesses choosing to close their doors and so on. And that's obviously going to impact unemployment, and we could see unemployment rise. So again, I think it's a vital time for business supports to be in place to try and get us through at least the rest of 2022.
And Damien, just looking at the housing crisis then, what impact is that having on workplaces?
Well, I suppose the big problem with the housing crisis is that certain employers are obviously on the lookout for talent in the stretched labour market, and when they're finding that talent, if they're not located locally, there's a very big problem in that you can't move someone geographically. So for example, if you were to look up rental locations around the county, and this is generally across the board, across the country, obviously there may only be one or two rental accommodations available in any one particular town. So there's kind of a rental bubble there as well that puts, I suppose, workers that are moving under pressure. So in some circumstances, that has put employers back into remote-only gigs, I suppose, because they know that if they attract talent from somewhere else, they're not going to be able to find rental accommodation for them. In some circumstances, employers have looked at taking up rental properties, but there's a problem in that in itself, in that flows a bubble in the rental market as well, because, you know, landlords may see employers coming into the market, and obviously that can blow up the rental prices as well. So, as I said, every crisis socially has its own impacts back in on the workplace, and most definitely the housing crisis is a problem area as well for employers now.
Damien, you mentioned remote working, and it's something that we all became very much accustomed to in recent years. Does it really, I suppose, have a part to play now in dealing with this crisis? Because I suppose it's a way that people won't have to refuse work if they can't find a place to live locally, if they're applying for a job, we'll say, that's outside of their own locality.
Yes, and may also become a very big consideration again over the winter, depending on some of the economic impacts and, you know, the energy and fuel crisis impacts of the war in Ukraine and so on. So some employers do have contingency plans in place, perhaps to put workers back working remotely. That may save on energy costs. I suppose if this energy crisis and fuel crisis was to get any worse, obviously employees not travelling to and from work every day in a fuel crisis may also save costs for personally for them and so on. So it is possible that we would see a bigger move back to remote working again, and it may actually make sense, an awful lot of sense, to an awful lot of people who went back into their workplaces and offices over the past 6 and 9 months and so on, to go back to remote working again from a financial point of view over the winter period again. But I suppose at the moment that's very much a contingency plan for many, but if things were to get worse, it's going to be a very real consideration again.
And do you think that many employers are open to the remote working idea? I know it's not possible in every job, but I suppose the jobs that it's possible in, do you feel employers are happy to have workers working remotely, or would they prefer to have them in the office with them?
Well, I think, debate is still continuing, really, and in my experience, the most important thing for any business is to, I suppose, be person-specific. Some employees don't like remote working, some do. An awful lot changed their mind, and the hybrid option has become, I suppose, a kind of go-to happy medium. I would say an awful lot of businesses are still exploring and learning, and I suppose, you know, there's been trial and error in an awful lot of cases. But I think what's important for any business and for any employer is to make it person-focused and person-specific. You know, I suppose rather than an employer deciding what works best, perhaps it is the employee that decides what works best for them. And I suppose a happy and content worker is a good productive worker. So that would be my advice with regard to the debate on remote working.
That's very good advice. And Damien, if there's anyone listening at the moment who will say has been approached by an employee to request a loan or anything else that we've talked about, you know, and that they have concerns or they're looking for a bit of advice and they want to contact you, will you just remind us how to get in touch?
Yeah, so our HR Buddy website is www.hrbuddy.ie. Our phone number is 064-66-98034, and you can reach us by email on info@hrbuddy.ie.
That's fantastic. Damien, it's been great talking to you and very informative, and thanks for taking the time to join me on the show.
Thanks, Amber. My pleasure.
And that was Damien McCarthy, CEO of HR Buddy. It's time for a quick break now, but stay tuned, as up next we'll hear about a very successful and well-known business here in Kerry.
If you're in business, you need to be kept informed. In Business on Radio Kerry, every Thursday from 6 to 7pm.
Welcome back to the show. Amber Galway here with you until 7 o'clock. Now, Ballygarry Estate Hotel and Spa is a place that many of you will be very familiar with. It's a hugely successful business that's been operating for generations. I'm delighted to be joined by owner Padraig McGillicuddy to hear about the business, how it's built up over the years and what's coming in the future. Padraig, you're very welcome to In Business. You're no stranger to the show and it's great to have you back on.
Thank you very much.
It's been probably 12 months since I was talking to you myself now at this stage, but how has business been since I was last speaking with you?
Well, I'd say since we were last speaking, anything was an improvement, because I'm sure that was a phase of lockdown. But it's superb, absolutely superb. We are probably in the busiest year we've ever had in our 64 years of trading through the three generations, and it's superb. You have residual business from last year and the year before in probably events and banqueting, and then everything else is just, it's very busy because some places are not catering at the same level they did pre-COVID, as in some venues or hotels are not doing food for the public, and it's making us busier. And then our business offering is very good in that we've got a very strong brasserie business, we've got a very strong spa business, and then our weddings, events, bedroom and whatnot are all flying, thanks be to God.
That's fantastic and very well deserved after such a difficult 2 years, if not more. So it's great to see it back and busier than ever.
Yeah, and we were very fortunate in that we took the time through COVID to, we acquired 70 acres surrounding the hotel, and then we repositioned ourselves as an estate, and we have now got built the new lodge on site where you can have your wedding ceremony on site, and in July and August we've 19 weddings on site in the lodge at Ballygarry, which changes the dynamic completely, because there are earlier check-ins and the guests are kind of lounging around for that half hour before the ceremony. So, the weddings are here earlier, we're busier earlier in the day, which is fantastic, and they're destination weddings more now than ever, so where they're a 2 and 3 day event, and they have a barbecue on the second day after the wedding, and often just the spa then on day 3 for the remaining families. So it's superb. It's a new dynamic, and we're probably well worthy of it after all the investment we made through the lockdown and the hardship of the lockdown. But just delighted to be trading, delighted to be open, and I'll never again complain about a busy day.
I can imagine, and it is very well deserved. Padraig, I suppose you've mentioned kind of the changes and I suppose the massive investment you've put into the place in recent years, but did you ever envisage that Ballygarry would arrive at the scale that it's at now?
No, I suppose you couldn't have, because the external factors that lended itself to be where it's positioned now, if you'll recall, or some listeners will recall, where the main road from Killarney to Tralee literally runs straight through our brasserie. So that was number one, when that's the N21, when that moved, that couple of hundred metres away from the hotel, that created a massive opportunity once we had acquired the land from the neighbour for the residual land that was there. And then the dual carriageway that runs on the western side of the hotel, that ran down, we acquired another piece of land there in two different stages, so that was three tranches of land the hotel acquired, and then the last large portion was that 70 acres that takes us from what was 10 acres up to over 100 acres now. This autumn we will connect with Ballyseedy Woods with the two bridges that have been built by the council, and that should be finished and open for next year. So essentially Ballygarry presents as a 180 acre estate through Ballyseedy Woods as well, even though we only own 100 acres of it. But it's changed the dynamic completely as a hotel. And it was those external factors that I've no control over that were, we often say luck, and certainly there is a good element of luck in business, there's no doubt. There's hard work, but luck plays a big part.
It certainly does. And Padraig, you would have been in your mid-20s when you took over the business. What was it like taking it over? Was it daunting, or how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was mid-20s, as you said, when my father passed away, and it was absolutely daunting. But I just took kind of a day at a time. Looking back now, you say, God, how did you manage it? When you see 25-year-olds coming up now, you think, God, would they be able for it or whatever? But, you know, it's just as it presents itself, you find strength every day. I parked my personal life. You know, I miss so many friends, stags and weddings and everything like that, and I had no option. I just had to put my head down and get buried into it. And then there posed a revenue issue on year two with the estate, and I had to deal with that, and that just got me more and more engrossed, and I had no option but just work hard. And I put the head down for maybe 10 hard years, but I was surrounded by superb people when my father passed away, and I still am. A lot of them still are with me, but some have retired, and they really were the backbone, and they watched out for me. They knew it was a bigger picture and a longer transition from father to son. And then there were some of the things I was coming up with, like building a spa, and some thought, that's crazy, that won't work, and then it worked. And then we built the pavilion as an event centre, and some thought, God, that's a bit excessive, and it worked. So I suppose after a while you gain credibility with your team, and they're like, right, maybe he's doing something right, and it just took from there, and I was leading and they were following, and we just became this dynamic team. And I've some staff who've worked for me for over our family for over 30 years, and they really are the backbone, because they, and 20 year service and whatnot. I mean, we joke with one of our managers here, Thais is with us 11 years and he calls himself the newbie. So the length of service is massive in the industry, and it was what probably transitioned me from taking over from my father in my mid-20s. So fantastic. I mean, I won't complain. It was very hard, it was very challenging, it was hard work, but sure, that's life, you know.
It certainly is, and I suppose it's very telling to see that you have staff who are there for so many years. I mean, it's a sign of a great business and a lovely place to work when you can say staff are with you for over 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're a happy bunch. I don't like hierarchical systems of management where you've got this big boss sitting in an office all day long, and you know that is, he or she is, are never seen on the floor. I get stuck in with all the team here when we need to. We have 160 staff over 7 departments, so you know they need good guidance and leadership. They need praise. They need reward. They need to be acknowledged. They need, you know, you need to know when they're having issues at home or whatever. So you know, we've strong HR management and whatnot, so they keep me in tune with the whole lot. But we try off the jacket and get stuck in. There's no airs of graces in Ballygarry. We just get on with the job, and we're a happy bunch. There's always giggling and laughing behind the scenes in the kitchens and whatnot. So, you know, they're a fun bunch to work with, and they don't take a lot of discipline or direction. They just, the older staff give them their direction, and it works, thankfully.
That's fantastic. And Padraig, people who were regulars to Ballygarry and even in those, you know, just around the county, even passing by, would have noticed probably in recent months a name change with yourselves. What inspired you to pursue the estate route?
Yeah, funny, a good question. So we started in 1958 as the Manhattan Hotel. Why? Because one of the investors, Ted Keane, had a restaurant in Manhattan, and I suppose Manhattan was really in vogue back then, and it was a really hip, cool name to have, and we went with that, or they went with that long before I was ever around. And then in 82, my father changed back to its original name as a house, Ballygarry House Hotel. Then in 2004 or 2005, I added the spa, so it was Ballygarry House Hotel and Spa. Then we were thinking of going down the road of Country House, and then we acquired the land of the estate. So we brought Falcha Ireland on board, and we said, look, help us identify who we are. We're kind of like getting a small bit lost here. Are we the Country House anymore? Are we something? Are we a resort hotel, which would normally be where you'd have a golf course or a lot of on-site amenities for kids in you know, swimming pools and slides and all this kind of thing? Well, we weren't any of that. And then, you know, it just kind of came to us through help with Falcha Ireland and steering that, you know, we really are becoming an estate property, which by it identifies itself as a large dwelling on a parcel of land owned by an individual. If you Google it, that's typically what it'll come up for, an estate. And we kind of identified with that, and we said, yeah, that fits, that's who we are. That kind of lends itself to where we want to go, with more on-site amenities of just leisure amenities, not, you know, golf courses. Who would want to compete with the calibre of links courses around the Kerry coastline? So, you know, all in all, it just lended itself to say, yeah, Ballygarry Estate is where we now are. And, you know, people always just called it Ballygarry anyway, so whatever tagged on after Ballygarry, we knew people would just identify with Ballygarry. So we just pronounced the name Ballygarry, identified it more on our signage and everything, and then it just followed as a resort. That's the next chapter.
Fantastic. That's very interesting. And I know sustainability is something that you're very big on in Ballygarry. Can you just explain to people who maybe aren't too familiar with it what sustainability means and I suppose how you apply it then to yourselves in Ballygarry Estate?
Yeah, I identify the word sustainability as the impact we will make for the next generation. I mean, that's in simplifying it, you know. So if we're abusing, you know, fossil fuels and burning excess of everything and over-consuming, well then, you know, we're just robbing from the generations to come from what the planet and the resources have and can give back. So essentially what we did in Ballygarry, we started like with our recycling and making sure we were trying to split everything. So our landfill is far less. We're about half the landfill we used to be, even though we're nearly twice as busy as we once were. So we have, by recycling plastics and glass and cardboard all separate, and that kind of was our starting point. And then, having acquired the land, we went down the road of our spa manager. Gina is a keen beekeeper, and she has her own apiary at home, so she established an apiary here at the hotel. So then we put in a wildflower meadow to support the apiary because the bee is in decline, and we set up this area of just conservation for that particular bee here on site. So again, that was giving back to just regenerating that type of bee to make sure that they have a future. We then put in an integrated constructed wetlands, it's known as an ICW, which is basically all the wet waste from the hotel flows by gravity down into ponds, and there are four ponds which are about an acre and a half each, and the water filters through reed bed construction with bugs and bacteria and everything, and nature runs its course, and at the far end water comes out absolutely pure and is tested in a laboratory every month. So that meant that we were no longer discharging beyond our license, that all waste is done absolutely organically, and that was with Kerry County Council and John Breen's initiative, really, who assisted us with that. And then we then buy all our energy is renewable, so we don't have any fossil fuels for Ballygarry anymore, and all our gas had an offset. It was offset on a plantation in Turkey, and that meant that all the carbon we burnt here was offset elsewhere. But that's kind of, you know, I wasn't keen on that. I wanted to offset it on site. So we planted 29,000 trees. They will offset the carbon. So, you know, all in all, we've got a very sustainable property now. We're going fitting a solar farm this October on site, which will be a very significant investment, but it will carry, we think, about 40% of the energy requirement of the hotel. And then lastly, what we plan on doing is adding sustainable pods for on-site residential. So basically, you'll be able to stay for a three-night stay or two-night stay in these cabins on the estate down by the woods, and they will have their own solar power. They will have their waste will go into the integrated wetlands, and basically that you're completely your stay has zero impact on nature by the way we will design them and do them. So that will be in the next 3 years. We hope to come up with them, and so eventually then there's talk of doing a growing more of our vegetables on site and using our, say, our coffee grinds and our eggshells and all that compost to support that. So, you know, it's a never-ending journey. I'm sure there'll be another an idea coming up next month and the month after, and we've got to just see what's financially viable, what lends itself to our sustainability core values and whatnot. So that's sustainability in a long-winded story, and that's how we're applying it at Ballygarry.
We must just take a very quick break now, but do stay tuned as we'll be hearing more from Padraig afterwards.
Keep up to date with Kerry Business News. Follow In Business or K on Twitter.
You're listening to In Business with me, Amber Galway. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can email inbusiness@radiokerry.ie, tweet the show, we're at InBusinessRK, or you can also get in touch via the Radio Kerry Facebook page. Now, we're still joined by Padraig McGillicuddy of Ballygarry Estate Hotel and Spa. Padraig, from our chat, we know that you've achieved so much during your 30-year career, but what would have been your greatest challenge so far, do you think?
Three things come to mind, but I would have to say COVID. It decimated our industry. It really violated our people, and our staff. And we had so many challenges, so many risks to take going through it. I remember sitting here with Thais one day saying, "What are we going to do? We're heading into another lockdown." It was the Christmas of, must have been 2020. I'm confused at this stage. But anyway, we had to decide: will we keep the staff on the books, or do we have to let them all off? And I said, "I just can't do it. I can't let them off the books." I said, "We've just got to work out a way to keep them." And we thought we would have 6 to 8 weeks, and then it went on for nearly 6 months. and we were watching, you know, losing 5 and 10 grand a week here, even though we had the massive supports from the government, which were incredible. But, you know, you still just the cost of keeping a building like this and keeping some residual heat coming through it, and, you know, all the different expenses that it takes to run a building like this. So, you know, we stayed with it, and 100% of our team came back to work, which was absolutely incredible, because I've heard other stories where, you know, hotels weren't as fortunate. But that was probably the greatest challenge, getting through COVID. And then, you know, you're thinking of the mental well-being of the staff, and you're trying to interact with them, you know, through online platforms and whatnot, and your own mental health, and trying to stay, you know, looking at the future and saying, God, how long can we weather this storm? And, you know, when you come through it then, and you get back up and you fire back up and you go through all the bumps in the road, and then you see the season so streamlined. We're having the most successful season we've ever had in guest satisfaction. We're now ranked number 2 in Ireland on TripAdvisor, which is fantastic. We have our concierge, Noel, has promised me we're going to get to position number 1 this year, and after that I think I'll retire, Amber. It'll be a downhill journey after that. That's my ultimate goal. But I'll answer your question by saying COVID has been the greatest challenge in my career so far.
I can imagine it's been very difficult. Padraig, you kind of touched on it there, but hospitality, many people would describe it as a vocation. I suppose it's tough hours, it's not sociable hours. What do you think needs to be done to kind of attract the next generation into the industry?
Well, to answer the first part, you know, is it difficult work, or is it a way of life? That's the way I look at it. I don't say, like, you know, I go to work and it's so hard work, because that's just, you know, a negative attitude that'll get you nowhere anyway. And if you approach your job with a negative attitude, you're going to come home with the negative vibes, you know. So I think you just approach it and saying, God, you know, I really love my job, which I do. I think if you're going to hit hospitality, you've got to love doing it. I often, you know, equate it to being a farmer. You know, it's a tough, tough career. You work all the hours of the day, and, you know, you've got to deal with all the challenges throughout the day. And, you know, what will be done for next generation to work in it? Well, you know, conditions in our industry have improved immensely, absolutely immensely. The rates of pay are way, way above what they used to be. 4.5% unemployment, there's less people around, so those in the industry are demanding more. But we have a residual problem from the 70s and 80s where this industry was abused. There is no two ways about it. And our predecessors, you know, underpaid people, the terms and conditions and the length of hours of work weren't right. You know, the conditions at work, in that staff dining and menus for staff and whatnot, weren't right. You know, there was no supports for mental health. And, you know, a lot of that wasn't even identified back then. But now it's an industry where you can have a full career in it. And two things have happened. We're dealing with a very, very educated society in Ireland, so we don't get people who want to pursue a career as a bar man or bar manager like it was in the 70s and 80s. You know, somebody would be very proud to be the head waiter of an established hotel in the 80s. And that was a very, you know, well-respected career. And that has changed because everyone is pursuing a third-level education and they want better things for themselves. But in this industry, you know, you'll find a lot of kids get into it, you know, to support themselves through college or whatever. And you know, a lot of it sticks. And I've got like 7 or 8 young boys and girls in their 20s now who are working with us and IT Tralee on a trainee management development program. So they will become management through a 4-year program of on-site training and college education at the same time. So both work very, very well hand in hand. I think it's about finding the people who love this industry. You know, people say, oh, I love 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. Fine, if that's your thing. But I've never known different, and I love taking a midday week off when, you know, there's less demand and less queues and less pressure on places, so that, you know, on the weekends, Saturday, Sunday, everything's manic. So that doesn't bother me personally, my career. And then, you know, with those involved in the career, you know, we end up, as in your 20s, you socialise together on a Tuesday, Wednesday night or whatever. So it's just a little different. We're off the normal sink of what everyone else does on a Monday to Friday. But, you know, the fun in the industry is great. You know, starting out as a young person, you have great opportunities. I mean, within a hotel environment, you could be in a beverage trade, you can be in the food industry, you could be chefing. And within chefing, there's probably 7-8 different types of chefs, you know, that will specialise in pastry or breakfast or a la carte or whatever type of dining. Then you've got digital management, revenue management, you've got human resource management, you've got, you know, sales, at marketing. You know, so there are so many diverse areas. You know, when you think of spa management, you know, the clerical side of a spa therapist, spa assistant. So, you know, people stop to think about hotel and don't realise how many opportunities there are within that hotel and how diverse it is within the business itself. So, you know, I have never counted, but I'm sure there's 30 different positions available in this particular model of hotel. And, you know, over the 7 different departments, you know, there are numerous positions within those departments. So it's a calibre and a work way of life. The work-life balance has improved enormously in the hotel industry. You know, holiday requests are met nearly every time. And, yeah, everyone just, you know, we get on with it. And if you create a happy environment for your team by ticking all those boxes, that'll reflect in the guest. And, you know, a happy team, a happy guest, you know, it really works here at Ballygarry.
Padraig, you're obviously a very successful manager yourself, but what traits would you attribute to someone who has a successful manager? I suppose, what qualities would you kind of pinpoint?
Well, leadership, you know, ultimately, you know, to be a good, strong leader and for people to want to follow you, that's ultimately, I think, where I've always aspired to be. To get there, you've got to be an innovator, a delegator, a communicator. You've got to be able to be a problem solver. And, you know, the attributes are multiple because it's a very, very diverse. You know, I don't know in the next 5 minutes what's going to happen in this industry. And that's what I love about it. It's so diverse. The alarm could go off in 2 minutes, and next of all, we're in a 20 minutes of pandemonium, and you're dealing with it and you get through it, and that's fine. And, you know, every hour there's another episode in your day. And the attributes for a manager are multiple. I mean, I don't know how you'd even limit them to have some knowledge of landscaping, have a good knowledge of food, have a knowledge of the spa industry. And for a general manager, you have a knowledge of everything, but you're not a specialist in anything, because the best management I've seen, and I would always say that all of my managers are stronger than me at their specific area, as in my revenue manager, my marketing manager, HR manager, spa manager, accountant. You know, they're all better than me at their jobs, and I want them to be better because I want to be just the general manager, and I will liaise with them, but I don't need to be a specialist in their field. Let them be strong at what they do. The weak general managers I've seen are threatened by those people, and I see them failing because they don't want anyone to be stronger than them. And, you know, that's probably a personal opinion and people will differ in that, but that's my experience to date, is that, you know, a strong leader will support himself with stronger people, and a weak leader will want to be champion.
That's very interesting and very true. It's great to have such a great team around you. Padraig, I suppose just before I let you go, we've talked so much about the many different projects that you've taken on board over the last few years, and just the amount of work you've done at the hotel just to improve it and just to make it a fantastic experience. But where would you like to see Ballygarry go over the next 20 years?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I who would have thought 20 years ago, you know, when we were at the side of the road trading away and my father was running it very, very well, who would have thought it would arrive to where it is now on 100 acres and, you know, 160 odd staff and, you know, 100,000 square feet and treble the revenue? Who knew that? But at the end of the day, 20 years from now, I guess we've probably paved the way, like it was paved for me, for its next journey. I think what I will be seeing out in my career is additional bedrooms, because the food and beverage side is a very, very hard day-to-day challenge. Bedrooms are a much easier part for our any of my peers in industry will contest to that, but, you know, bedrooms are a lot easier to maintain and service and sell than trying to maintain food all day, every day is a very opinionated industry, in that you'll have 4 or 5 people getting the same food and have all have different opinions of it. So that's a challenging industry. We will develop more bedrooms and accommodation offerings, as in the log pods I was talking about, and we'll have a spa development, because the demand in North Kerry is vast for an outdoor spa, and we have that as full planning and ready to rock. We were supposed to roll it out in 6 weeks' time, but we've paused for a year because of through the advice of our design team, that just the cost is prohibitive right now. So we'll probably roll those two developments out together, a bedroom offering and a spa offering, hopefully in start construction September 2023, and have it open for the season of 2024. after that, I don't know what's next. I suppose I'm heading for 50, so I need to slow down some bit, maybe take back some of the hours I didn't get in my 20s and 30s. But, you know, the future's bright, the future's long. Ballygarry will be here long after I'll be here. And, you know, it really is an institution at this stage. Of people have so many memories, and between staff and customers, of how many different events and the history, and how many, I don't know, you know, million people have been served through here. And you know, it's given a lot of people a lot of career starts in their careers, wherever they're diversified to. So it's a long future ahead for it. It'll just be about having the right person to run it after me, and let's see where they go from there.
Absolutely, and we look forward to seeing what you're doing. There's always something exciting happening there, which is great. And look, the very best of luck with it, and thank you for taking the time to join me on the show today.
Thank you very much, Amber.
We must take another quick break now, but do stay tuned, as we'll be hearing from Liam Quinlan to hear about their involvement in a recent trade show up next.
If you're in business, you need to be kept informed. In Business on Radio Kerry, every Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m.
You're very welcome back to the final part of In Business this evening. You can still get in touch with us here. You can email inbusiness@radiokerry.ie. You can tweet the show. We're at InBusinessRK. You can also send us a message on the Radio Kerry Facebook page if you'd like to do it that way. Now, BioFac, a leading organic Irish exporters trade fair, attracts buyers from over 130 countries and was on recently and attracted over 50,000 visitors over the 3 days when it was running. Among the Irish companies exhibiting was none other than Quinlan's Fish and Seafood Bars. I spoke to Liam Quinlan a little earlier on to hear all about it. Have a listen. Liam, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi, Amber. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. So Quinlan's was among the businesses that exhibited at the BioFac. So that was a leading trade fair for organic produce. Can you explain to me why you decided to take part, Liam?
Well, it's our second time exhibiting it. Our last one was in 2020. Just at the onset of COVID, actually, just that February. But it's, like you said, it's the premier organic trade show held in Nuremberg in Germany every 12 months. And it's probably the biggest organic marketplace, I suppose, in Europe, for want of a better word. You have 9 halls there covering cheeses, meat, fish, cosmetics, wine, beer, everything. Everything organic under the one roof. So it's a great place for us to meet existing customers, but also to a bit of a hunt for new business as well.
Absolutely, it's a fantastic platform. And I suppose you kind of touched on it there, but what kind of exposure then did taking part in this event give the business?
Well, we were under the Borbia umbrella. Ireland had a pretty impressive stand there, actually. So there were 7 companies exhibiting, everybody from, say, the Good Herdsmen, who are organic beef farmers up in Tipperary, to Glenisk Yogurts, who everybody will know, and Connemara Seaweed ourselves, and Cashel Blue Cheese, people like that. So there were 7 all here on the Irish stand, but it was a quite impressive stand in Hall 5, right in the middle of the exhibition, and we had a great profile from it. And like I said, we met a lot of our existing customers, but also chasing down a bit of new business as well.
That's fantastic, and it's always a good place to meet, I suppose, a network with people when there's such a big range of people there, and it's such a prestigious event on top of that.
Well, yeah, like we had a couple of our customers there from the southern tow of Italy, who I wouldn't have seen now for a couple of years, but to get down to the southern tow of Italy this time of year, you wouldn't get there to see them. And we had other German, Austrian, Swiss people like that calling to see us as well. So it was great. You're meeting a lot of people under one roof without travelling all over Europe.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. And Liam, we've often spoken on this programme and on many other programmes on Radio Kerry as well about the importance of local businesses and local produce on top of that then as well. And this is something that we're really noticing now. There's a real push on local produce and local businesses. Is that something that you're noticing with customers or even new customers, I suppose, that are looking for that?
Well, I suppose pertaining to that show in Germany, Irish organic food would be of an extremely high value and highly sought after. Our organic standards are probably the highest in the world, and as you know yourself, our food and the quality of the food we produce on the island is absolutely second to none. So if you look at, say, the Good Herdsmen, who are the beef farmers next to us there, they're 32 years in Germany now, and they're listed in every major supermarket in Germany because all of their beef is grass-fed, and Irish food is really, really wanted and prized there.
Liam, I spoke to you last summer as well as part of our Open for Business series about Quinlan's and I suppose about how the business survived during the pandemic. How is business for you this summer now in comparison?
It's actually, we're lucky enough, we're ahead of last summer. We've seen good growth there this year. Now, staff shortages and all that are probably the biggest constraints at the moment. We're really operating at, we wouldn't want anybody to fall. It's like a domino. If we 1 or 2 people out, we have a real effect. And I suppose earlier in the summer, when we had people out with COVID, we were really, really stretched to breaking point. But at the minute, look, We haven't excess capacity in the team, but we're getting there every day. Now, unfortunately, we had to keep our Kinmare branch closed this year because we just couldn't get the people to man this because the people that were working there last year were out of our Killarney branch, but they're back in there this year. So, look, I think everybody is feeling the pinch, but the summer itself has been quite good, and sure, look what the week that we have coming up with the weather now, I think everybody's going to give it one last blast.
I was going to ask you about the struggles, I suppose, that we're seeing in every sector, really, to get staff, and you mentioned it there, but it must have been a difficult decision, but I suppose one that you didn't really have too much choice in making, the fact that you couldn't get staff for the Kinmare shop. That's very difficult.
No, we talked long and hard, myself and my two brothers, about it, and we really wanted to give it a go, but we were just really, really constrained, and we couldn't. So something had to give, and unfortunately for the summer to Kinmare, but look, we'll be looking and hopefully get back there open for next year.
Absolutely, hopefully so. And Liam, I suppose, what do you think is the reason behind the struggles for people to get staff, or what do you think maybe can be done to rectify it, or is there anything that can be done?
Well, I suppose in the hospitality game as such, it's the hours, the anti-social hours, you're working and everybody else is off enjoying themselves. So a lot of people, I think, have made the decision for life choice to work in a factory 9 to 5, for want of a better word, and that you're not doing weekends and stuff. So there's quite a lot of that, and I suppose with the COVID, quite a lot of our European cousins went home as well. A lot of them, I know, we have a couple of ourselves, our lads are working with us, they built their own houses, and they said, look, now's the time, their kids are starting school, so maybe now's the time to go back. So I think everybody's in the same boat, unfortunately, but it might right itself hopefully over time.
Hopefully it will, absolutely. You mentioned it there, like, you know, the hours, I suppose, are very unsociable hours, but the only other side of the coin, I suppose, is looking at the hospitality sector, that it is very rewarding and it does seem to be a lovely sector to work in if you're happy, I suppose, to have those hours, but it's quite a rewarding one because you're dealing with people who maybe are on holidays or who are visiting the area for whatever reason, and, you know, it tends to be a nice sector to work in.
Yeah, well, look, I know myself working in the restaurant at night time myself. I get great pleasure out of working there and meeting your customers and meeting people, like you say, enjoying themselves on holidays. And I suppose in the likes of Killarney and the bigger hubs, it doesn't really matter whether you're working Friday or Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, because there's such a social scene the 7 nights of the week there anyway. No matter what night you go out that you're off, there's always people out and about, you know. And I know in Killarney in particular, Monday and Tuesday nights are big nights because the hospitality people, most of them would be off them nights after working the weekend, so they kind of have their own clique as such.
Are you looking for staff at the moment, and if so, how can people get involved or get in contact with you?
Always looking for staff. I suppose our biggest priority now as we come into the winter time is our busy time at home in Carstavine in the factory. We really ramp up from now on, so we are looking for operatives there. There's flexi shifts, there's days, there's nights, there's evenings, there's weekends, whatever you want. But I suppose Carstavine is really where it's happening over the next 4 or 5 months into Christmas. We have a pretty big lead in and we have pretty decent orders to fill for Christmas, so we really need to get the head down now.
That's it. And how can people contact you, Liam, if they're interested in getting involved?
Contact pr@quinlansfish.com.
Liam, just going back to the trade fair there again, it was for organic produce. It's great to be up there, you know, with a selected number of businesses who were out there showcasing, because, you know, it's great to kind of put Kerry on a platform and to show the best of the best, which is what she have.
Yeah, look, like I say, Bord Bíon is a lot of credit to them. They really put a fantastic show and a fantastic stand together for us to showcase everything. And I think in Germany, Irish people and Irish companies in general are very, very well got, because there's quite a lot of German business to our county anyway. And they're well aware of the brand Kerry as such. So look, I suppose we're only capitalising on that as such.
And Liam, just before I let you go, I suppose it's worth mentioning that Radio Kerry and Quinlan's Fish and Seafood Bars are giving away a total of €3,000 in cash and vouchers as well for Quinlan's over a 3-week period. It's great to have you involved in that competition, I suppose, and just spreading a bit more joy around the county like you do on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, look, I want to say thanks to, I suppose, all the listeners in Radio Kerry, because they make our business, and every day of the week we have customers in all of our shops, all of our seafood bars. It's just something we want to give back, something small, and I suppose in conjunction with Radio Kerry, who all the team there involved have been very, very good to us over a long number of years now. But look, it's just something, and I suppose no better week for it with the week we have with weather, to spread a bit of love, as they say.
Exactly, you can't go too far wrong. Liam, as always, it's been fabulous talking to you, and the very best of luck over the rest of the summer. I'm no doubt it'll be a busy one for you.
Well, we've the puck goes for the rest of this week to keep us busy now anyway, so and the rows after that. So it will all come together, hopefully.
It will indeed. Thanks a million, Liam.
Okay, thanks, Amber.
And that brings us to the end of this evening's show. Thank you for joining me, Amber Galway. Thank you, as always, to my guests who joined me this evening. They were Damien McCarthy, CEO of HR Buddy, Padraig McGillicuddy of Ballygarry Estate Hotel and Spa, and Liam Quinlan of Quinlan's Fish and Seafood Bars. This show will be podcast in the coming days, and you can listen back by visiting radiokerry.ie. Then just click on the podcast section and then click on In Business. Stay tuned to us here on Radio Kerry. Sari Houlihan is up next with AgriTime. That's all from me. Enjoy the rest of this lovely evening.